And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks. DJ Bucky back with you. Buck, how you doing, man?
Man, I'm good. Thursday night game. Got a couple of Thursday night games that I'm excited about. One, we have the Miami Dolphins and the Baltimore Ravens that we will be on the call. Amazon and Twitch, you can check us out. But the Tar Heels get a chance to take down the Pitt Panthers. You know, that's a big one now. That'd be the second.
You guys
are
coming off a big win now.
I mean, yeah, after we tricked off a bunch of games early. But anyway, it's not how you start, it's how you finish. And so we get a chance to finish it the right way. But really, DJ, we'll have this one on record because the two quarterbacks playing in the game are getting a little buzz. Sam Howell, Kenny Pickett. Let's kind of begin to see and assess what that 2022 quarterback class could look like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to get to that a little bit later, too. I watched Pickett on the plane this last week. Actually, we can just kind of let's jump to it right now. I did him, Buck. There's some buzz building on him. I liked him. He's a good player. He reminded me, I said kind of like a more athletic Matt Hasselbeck, but he plays with confidence. He's got, you know, the thing is he's got smaller hands is what everybody tells you that goes in there. He wears the two gloves like Bridgewater did coming out, but he's got good arm strength. I mean, there's nothing wrong there. He can play make a little bit. He can create, make some things happen. For the most part, really good decision maker. You know, some people have said kind of Joe Burrow light is the comp from some of the scouts that have gone through there. I just thought, you know, with Matt Hasselbeck, just, you know, real efficient, quick processor, balls out where it needs to be. He's a good player. Like, he doesn't have an outstanding trait. Like, there's no superpower, as you like to say. But just a good, really good, solid overall player.
It's funny because there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with being a really good player. I think the trick to quarterback evaluations is being able to know exactly who the guy is. And as you and I begin to present the player is, hey, here's what the player is, and here's what he needs. I think we've done this before where we talked about this. It's almost like Christmas time, and you get the toy. Let's make sure we give the instructions so you know how to operate the toy. And I feel like with Kenny Pickett, certainly you want to make sure that you have a cast of playmakers around him and all that other stuff. You want to make sure that the system allows him to play to his strengths, which is get the ball out, do some of those things. He can play make and make some things happen. So all those things are good. I'm going to say this because I've obviously watched Sam Howell more being a Tar Heel. I think Sam Howell, like the slow start, has kind of maybe turned people off of Howell. But I think they need to go back and watch the tape of late because he is really having a very strong year, a solid year. And what he has done is very reminiscent to what Baker Mayfield did his last year at Oklahoma. He's running a little more than you would think. Like, DJ, this dude is running the ball and having success as a runner. I'm not saying that he comes to the league and does that kind of stuff, but I think he has shown more athleticism and mobility than maybe we thought based on how he played the first couple years. And I think that may add a little to the game. That said, I think the Baker Mayfield comp, I think you gave him that comp early.
Yeah.
I think that's a very solid comp. And I think whoever takes him, if you take him and you put him in the same system like Baker's in, I think Sam Howell can have that kind of success because he's very accurate. He does have a pretty good arm, and the mobility would allow him to play in a system like that, that he could have the same level of success that I would say that we've seen the Jimmy Garoppolos, the Baker Mayfields, the Kirk Cousins, and those guys have in that system where if it's set up for him, they can deal and they can operate. I don't know if he'll ever be a superstar, but I think he can be a high-functioning starter in the right system.
No doubt. I'm really looking forward to watching that game, especially when it comes out on tape to study those two quarterbacks, because I think you brought up a good point. I haven't seen Sam since some of the early games this year. I want to say with Virginia Tech, he did not play well in that game.
Didn't play well.
So I'm anxious to kind of come back and watch some of that. I'm going to show you, I'm going to pull up on my computer here real quick, Buck, because this is the fun stuff when you're doing one of these things, one of these podcasts, and then this picture. Hold on so I can show it to you. It gets posted right there.
Who is that?
Cam and Tepper. Cam Newton is back with the Carolina Panthers, man. I know we've got some stuff we want to get to. I've got the top 25 rookies. We want to talk about this Thursday night game with Baltimore and the Dolphins. But we got to hit this. It just went down. Cam Newton is back with the Carolina Panthers. Your thoughts?
Man, I think they had to go a long way to patch that relationship up, right? Because there were some hard feelings when Cam left the Carolina Panthers. Cam more so than Matt Rhule, just saying, hey, man, I maybe didn't feel like he got a fair shake at the end of that deal. But, you know, man, distance and time, all that stuff can make everything work out. I think what you
makes the heart fond, something.
Distance makes absence makes the heart go fonder, whatever that is. Yeah. I think, however you want to say it. I think here's the thing. He is the icon for the franchise. I would say he's probably the most famous player. He accomplished the MVP. He took the team to the Super Bowl. I think the time apart probably has led to a great appreciation from both parties in terms of who he is in the organization. Cam probably realizes the Panthers were probably the best place for him to kind of do his deal because they appreciated him and they kind of understand who he is and they kind of got him in that area. And then I think the Panthers now may realize, like, you know, maybe he wasn't so bad. Maybe there's some stuff that we could do. Maybe some stuff we could do to help him, that stuff. And I think it's just kind of like the perfect storm. Sam Darnold getting hurt, probably being out for a long time, gives them an opportunity to kind of walk him back into the building and see what can they do for the latter part of the season to kind of see how this works out and what it looks like. Because I like P.J. Walker, but I don't think they see P.J. Walker as a future starter for the team. So at least if you can bring somebody back, bring someone who knows the landscape, the fans know him, and he can play a little bit, even though he didn't play great last year for the Patriots.
Okay. This is right in your wheelhouse because this is kind of right during your era. We're in the same era, but I know you remember this. How bad do you want to see Cam walk into the facility and go straight Dion? This is my house. I built this place. You remember Prime? You remember Prime?
I know. Yes. Yes. When he came back to the Georgia Dome, had the infamous fight with Andre Rison, had a pick six when he was playing with the 49ers and all that, his return. I do think it'd be great because, you know, the facility.
By the way, let's give Nabil homework. Nabil, in post. So we're recording this now. You have to insert that right now. So go find that clip. It's your homework, and you do insert it right now.
This is my house, and this will always be my house. Now let's continue.
Such a great clip.
How great is that?
So, but look, he can't even really say it's his house because they have a new facility now in Rock Hill because they moved their operations from Charlotte to Rock Hill. So he has to go to a new address to now say it's my house. But when he walks back into the stadium, I think it's still called Bank of America Stadium. He can do it when he walks out.
It's the pause, by the way, with Dion. It's the pause between this is my house. It's that pregnant pause right there that makes that whole soundbite work.
Oh man, so great. But no, I think this is great. It's great. I think the team is better constructed this year than it was when we last saw Cam in the mix. And so he'll have an opportunity to kind of do some of those things that he's still getting it. They still can run it with Christian McCaffrey. They got playmakers on the outside. I would say that offensively, it's a better group that he's playing with than he played with in New England. And so now it's a matter of him learning the offense and Joe Brady doing some stuff to kind of help him get going. But it should be fun to see it. I mean, we all like to reminisce. I just think it's funny. All those people that got rid of the Cam jerseys, now they're kind of rummaging through the garage and the trash.
Trying to find that thing. My son has one. My son has one, a Super Bowl jersey. The Cam Super Bowl jersey. They're going to fish that thing out of the closet. It's back.
So
that's
you never know. But DJ, that's why we always talk about in this business, the way that you leave.
Don't burn bridges.
No.
Don't burn bridges.
Yeah.
You can come back. All right, I want to, on the subject of the Panthers, before we move on to some other stuff, there's like rumblings you hear, you know, LSU job is open and they have a rather large budget to do whatever they want to do and go after whoever they want to go after. I mean, obviously you've seen stuff about Jimbo Fisher. We all know what he's making at A&M and what it would cost to go get him. But one of the names you hear kind of on the periphery, and I think people just kind of, whatever, that's a pipe dream, is you hear Matt Rhule's named a little bit with LSU. And I know, you know, and I don't want Matt to get offended like Mike Tomlin got offended that we could talk about a pro coach with a college job. But I want to ask just a simple question, okay? I'm not trying to get you in trouble with your former employer here, but better job, Carolina Panthers head coaching job, or the LSU Tigers head coaching job?
That LSU job is really intriguing. Now, it's a head knocker because of the division that you're in. You have to deal with Nick Saban. You got to deal with Jimbo. You got to deal with some heavyweights in that thing. But, DJ, a pro job is only as good as your quarterback.
Yeah.
And if you don't have a quarterback or if you don't have a path to get a high-end quarterback, it's a hard job in the pros. You can't win without a quarterback. I mean, that's what we're seeing. And so if I'm at Rule, I'm going to have to look at my roster and see, A, do I have a quarterback on the roster? B, is there a quarterback in the offseason that I can get, a veteran quarterback that's going to shake loose, that I can get that'll immediately make us a playoff contender?
I mean, they guaranteed Sam's fifth-year option. So,
right. So
they're paying him next year.
Yeah.
What, so $19 million or whatever.
Yeah. So he's there. And in three, is there a quarterback in the draft that can immediately reverse your fortunes as a franchise and give you hope that you can get it done? And right now, it's no. Like, I just don't know if they have those things. So then when I think about LSU and going to college, man, that's like those. It's like putting on the slippers, the bedroom loafers. Like, he goes right back. He used the same thing that he's used at Temple, Baylor, and whatever, but he's doing it with a better product. I mean, Temple and Baylor were in the dumps when he showed up. He goes to LSU. They're a couple years removed from winning a national championship. We understand the recruiting footprint that is there. You ain't got to go far for players. Everyone in Louisiana wants to play at LSU. And so if you're Matt Rule, you just kind of look around and say, hey, we kind of get the program going. We kind of make them tough, kind of fix this, fix that. You're right back in the mix. Because, DJ, think about this. As bad as it's been for Ed Orgeron, right, they're still very competitive. Yeah. I watched him play
down to the wire.
Right. I watched him play Alabama, and I'm looking at the players. Guys. And I'm like, they got some players.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just saying, if you're Matt Rule and you fancy yourself maybe as more of a college coach than an NFL coach, man, you jump at the opportunity to go to LSU with the brand behind you, the recruiting footprint that's right there, and all the bells and whistles that come with coaching an elite team in the SEC. It's a much better job than the previous college jobs that he's held, and we saw the success that he had there.
Yeah, I'm not saying that he will do it. We
got to take the phone call, though.
But that's what I'm saying. It's, some of them are eye roll hang up, right? Hey, Matt Rule, it's Iowa State.
Hey, it's UConn. Hey, yeah, it's UConn. UConn calling with you being?
Eye roll, hang up the phone. LSU, it's like,
let's talk.
Tomorrow, 3:00. Good. Does that work for you? Okay. Block a little time off there. We'll discuss this a little bit.
Hey, there's a Bojangles around the corner. We can just kind of slide in there and just kind of talk.
Get a biscuit. Nothing wrong with that. A little ham biscuit, and we'll see if we can work this thing out.
A little biscuit and some iced tea. We just kind of talk about it and just see what it looks like.
I know the SEC. You said it. You've got Georgia and Bama you got to deal with, but LSU is that's a brand, man, and you could throw a rock and hit enough players to hit the guys you need to come in there and win a national championship. And when you walk into a living room, LSU means something, especially down there in Louisiana and Texas. So, you got a chance to go be a perennial national championship contender. And by the way, I know he's making a ton of money in Carolina and has long-term security. That's a blank check down there in Baton Rouge, man. They'll write you whatever you need.
Blank check, man. And you make that buyout so significant that no matter what they say and when the tide turns, they're going to have to stroke a huge check with a lot of commas and zeros. And so I think you have to do that. And DJ, the other thing that happens is when the word about LSU gets out there, you know who else places a phone call? USC.
Yeah.
And USC is like, hey, whoa, hey. we want to get in. I don't think it's a better fit for him. I think the LSU job is a better fit because I think you win national titles at both, but I think it's different in terms of how you build it. I think the LSU is probably more like the way that he likes to build as opposed to the SC thing.
It's hard for me. And as we've talked about this before, but SC has always been a premier job and the history that they've had there and the the potential and the upside. The longer I pay attention to this college football season, the more I'm beginning to think football is not so relevant out here on the West Coast. It's hard not to think that.
Yeah, it's different. And I would say it because we both spend time. I grew up in the South. You played in the South at a few different schools, so you kind of understand the lay of the land. Out West, it's funny, right? out west is it's cute. Hey, it's football season. That's great or whatever. DJ, in the South, particularly in SEC country, there are two seasons. Mm-hmm. There's football season, and then there's recruiting
spring,
season.
And then there's spring football season. And then there,
I mean, if you just think about particularly down there, the fact that Alabama and those schools get 90,000 folks.
Tennessee was getting 100 in there when they were terrible.
For a spring game. Like, it is unbelievable. And just the recruiting access. Because when we talk to these coaches, right? We talk to the coaches in the pack, not only when we were scouts, but now in this part of the business. Defensive linemen are just in your backyard in the SEC.
Yep.
And that is the biggest difference between the SEC and the rest of the conferences is in that part of the country. Those, as we talk about, there are not many that walk the face of the earth that are like that. They all happen to be in those areas. Mm-hmm. And you get them big, athletic, physical. And it's not a coincidence. Just look at the offensive and defensive lines in that conference. When you look at Georgia, you look at Bama, you look at the way Texas A&M is constructed, even a down LSU team and all of those other, they look different than when we look out here on the West Coast. It's different. And so the priorities. So, I mean, the West Coast is just different.
This is what I was just looking at. So somebody else brought this up the other day. They said, hey, do you think that who were we talking about again? Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma. He was like, do you think if LSU calls Lincoln Riley and throws all kinds of money at him, do you think he would do it? And the immediate other person said, you know, there's no way he's at Oklahoma. He's been in the playoff, this, that, and the other. I'm like, well, that's getting ready. You go in the SEC now. That's not going to be – it's not going to be a cakewalk to get in there. I said, here's the difference. And I just looked this up because I wanted to be sure. Oklahoma, as great as they've been, you think about the number one overall pick quarterbacks they've had. Mm-hmm. They've had the wideouts. They've had some linebackers. When you get into the games against the big boys, your defensive line is what matters. They've had offensive linemen, right? Yeah. We've seen some good offensive linemen, second-round picks, you know, good players.
They can't get Cody defense right.
So, you know, when the last time they had a defensive lineman that was drafted in the first two rounds was 2015, Jordan Phillips in the second round. So since Lincoln Riley's been there, they haven't had a defensive lineman go in the first round. He didn't get there in 2015. It was after that, right? So he hasn't even had a defensive lineman get picked in the second round.
Wow.
Guess what? You go to LSU, you get first and second round defensive linemen.
That's the biggest difference, DJ. That's the biggest difference in all those teams. When you look at those teams, as much as we talk about the offensive stuff, it's the D lineman. It's the D line play. We talked about Clemson winning national titles, but not having an offensive lineman to get drafted at the first round. No. But you look at their defensive line lineage, they've been able to produce defensive linemen. They get drafted as top picks. Look, that's the bedrock. If you want to win a national title, that's where it starts. It starts in the trenches, and it starts on the defensive side of the ball. You have to have some war daddies to be able to get it done. One of the reasons that we are talking about Georgia is not because of their offense. It's because when you look at their defense, one, they're rolling them in like a hockey line change, and they are big, they are fast, and they are real physical. Mm-hmm. And I think there's an article in The Athletic where they were talking about like the demise of Florida, and Kirby Smart was just kind of talking about like how you have to build a program and how you have to love the recruiting part of it. Mm-hmm. And they are bringing players in left and right, and they're stacking five stars on top of five stars, and they're telling them, hey, man, two dogs, one bone. You got to figure it out. You know, you gotta figure it out. And that's what it is. And the beautiful thing about like watching the way that it plays out, and we always talk about this, DJ, it's no different than National Football League. We can talk about all the shiny stuff and the bells and whistles on the perimeter, but you better be able to get it done up front, D-line and O-line. And that's why it's so great that you did that little thing on the Browns the other day.
Yeah.
Because it's funny, right? When we talk about the Browns in this, not necessarily the smoothest transition, but I will say this. Basically, what the Cleveland Browns did, they swapped out a shiny toy on the outside in Odell Beckham Jr. for foundational pieces on the inside.
Yep.
And what they did to me is Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski let the football world know what their brand is. and what they're about. I now know exactly what the Cleveland Browns are about. The Cleveland Browns are about rock'em sock'em football, smash mouth football, and they're building with the bigs up front. And it doesn't matter about the auxiliary pieces. When you commit to guards on back-to-back days on 3 and 4 year extensions, you're telling your team it all starts right here up front. And to me, that is impressive because it is suggesting to the world, hey, this is how we're going to build a team. I think it also sends a message to your quarterback. Hey, man, if you do this thing the right way, we're always going to keep you protected. We're going to have all the stuff around you because everyone is signed. Nick Chubb, Kareem Hunt, the offensive line. You just got to play your part. And playing your part may mean taking a little less so you can do a little more. Mm-hmm. Because it's in place for the Browns to be okay.
No doubt. 100%. I thought it was fascinating, the timing of that. One goes out and then they take care of two of their own. Interesting statement that was made by the Browns.
And I don't think it's a coincidence.
I got to go back and fact check myself here. So I mentioned that thing about Oklahoma, right? Mm-hmm. Going back to 2015. Since 2015, this shocked me when I looked this up. LSU's only had two defensive linemen since 2015 in the first or second round. One of them is with the Jags and Kalevon Chaisson, who's done nothing. And the other one, obviously, is a home run in 2015, Danielle Hunter. Danielle Hunter was a third round pick. Wow. Yeah, that's so they've only had one. Good wow. night. How is that possible?
Well,
Alabama and Georgia taking them all?
Maybe. But you know, you gotta love the recruiting product. That's interesting though, DJ.
That shocked me.
But you know what that also does? That speaks to why they've been so inconsistent in terms of being able to compete and vie for the title. Yeah. The consistency that you've seen in the SEC has been Alabama and Georgia. Mm-hmm. And Alabama and Georgia look, it's like building a house. They build the house on a solid foundation. The D-line is always going to produce that. I mean, just think about Alabama. Alabama, Quinnen Williams couldn't get on the field.
Oh, my gosh.
The next year, he goes and he plays a ton. And it's every year there's a story like that. Hey, man, where's this guy come from? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, he was there. He was just rotating in, kind of. This is his year to start. He starts and becomes a top pick. It's the machine on both sides.
Interesting. Ohio State is the one who's cleaning up on all these defensive linemen. Michigan has had a bunch of defensive linemen too. Those two Big Ten schools have done a really nice job with defensive linemen. It's interesting,
right? So here's the thing about Michigan, right? Because I kind of feel bad for Harbaugh and the narrative that is out there about Michigan, right? Because they can't knock off Ohio State. Mm-hmm. But historically, Ohio State has always been the Big Ten power, not Michigan.
Yeah.
Like if you go back and look through the annals, it has always been Ohio State kind of dominating the conference, not Michigan. They are building it the right way. They just have the problem that they have Ohio State in their side of the thing.
I know.
Like, that's it. If they were in a different side and they played in the championship game, then we wouldn't have it. But because the road to the Big Ten championship game goes through Ohio State, they can't get there.
No. That's really interesting, man, when you look at that. Yeah, Ohio State, hats off to them. They've recruited their butts off on the defensive line. All right, I want to get some of these other topics here. So let's take a quick break, and we'll be back right after this. All right, Buck, we've hit on Cam Newton. We've hit on the Carolina thing and the LSU job opening. We've touched on the Browns a little bit. I thought that was fascinating as well. Let's jump through these top 25 rookies real quick. Then I want to get to this Thursday night game. All right, you ready? Okay, so I did my halfway point ranking of these top 25 rookies, which, believe it or not, some people didn't agree with on social media. Yeah,
no people. People didn't like your list.
Couple people. So I went Micah Parsons 1. He's like borderline defensive player of the year conversation. He's not going to win that award, obviously, but he's inserted himself into that. He's an elite player with all that he's done, a dominant player. The 2-3 debate is a good one to have. You've got Ja'Marr Chase and Rashawn Slater, who have both been elite at their positions. I think they're both Pro Bowl players. To me, it's a flip a coin. I ended up going with Chase because he's had some of those big games here recently, but him and Slater, that's a fair discussion. Kyle Pitts launched all the way up to 4th. Mac Jones has been the most consistent rookie quarterback. He's 5. Javonte Williams, your Tar Heel, 6. The running back's been really, really coming on. Mm-hmm. Creed Humphrey's been an outstanding center. He's 7. Najee Harris, guy you loved, Buck. We've seen him catch the ball a bunch. Odafe Owe, we're going to see him tonight in the Thursday game for the Ravens. His leads them in pressures. He's been excellent. Devontae Smith, I moved, or he's sitting here at the number 10 spot. Saw him last week. He had 5 for 116 against the Chargers. He's been impressive. So that's the top 10.
No, man, it's been a really solid group. DJ, I think what's really impressive is we've had a bunch of different guys come in different walks, meaning not just first-round guys that have come and made contributions. You talk about Javonte Williams. We can talk about Creed Humphrey. Guys that have been able to get right on the field and have immediate success. And to me, it just is about the quick developmental process, the quick understanding that they have of the National Football League, a great job of the coaches putting those guys in positions to succeed. And then it's just, man, college football is really providing NFL guys with some plug-and-play players, maybe more so than any other time in the history of the draft, that we're getting plug-and-plays at all levels of the draft. And so I think people are benefiting from that.
All right, I'm going to go 11 through 20 and then let you pick out a name you think is interesting here. 11, Trevor Lawrence. 12, Patrick Surtain II. 13, Elijah Mitchell, running back for the Niners. 14, Nick Bolton with the Chiefs. 15, Jalen Waddle with the Dolphins. 16, Christian Barmore. He's been outstanding with New England. 17, Trey Smith, the big guard with the Chiefs. So they've got two rookie offensive linemen. JOK, Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, is 18. He's missed a couple games. He's missed three games, or he'd be much higher on this list. 19, Elijah Vera Tucker for the Jets, who's come on. And 20, Justin Fields. So you've bookended by quarterbacks there. Fields comes into the list for the first time at 20. And then you also look at Trevor Lawrence. He's there at number 11.
Yeah, I think the big thing is, and staying with the quarterbacks, your young quarterbacks are really beholden to the guys that they have around them. Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields, respectively, don't necessarily have, I would say, the right environment around them to allow them to flourish. But what they've done is they've shown us enough flashes to feel good about what they could be. And if their teams do it right over the next year or two, those guys should really have major pops year two, year three. I think the Elijah Mitchell discovery and revelation is one that will kind of feed the debate when it comes to running backs. Do you need to spend big draft capital to get one, or can you find one anywhere in the draft or after the draft to kind of put on the field and have success? The Niners have done it successfully time after time, as a lot of people that employ their system have done. But I think Elijah Mitchell will be kind of like that test case. He'll be another example of, hey, you can find him anywhere. You just got to know what you're looking for. You have to have the right system in place.
Yeah, no. He's really, you know, speed and power. He's brought that to the table. We saw that in college, and it's come up in a big way. The last five here, Nate Hobbs with the Raiders, our buddy Rhett's favorite player in the league.
Interesting.
He's been outstanding as a nickel. Michael Carter, the running back for the Jets, who's done it running and receiving. Kind of, by the way, at the 32, he's not as strong as MJD, but just wearing the number 32 out there looks like a little like MJD. Kadarius Toney. Real explosive player, has come on for the Giants. Another Giant follows him up, Azeez Ojulari. He's got a bunch of sacks.
Amazing.
And then Pat Freiermuth, the tight end from the Steelers, rounds it out at 25.
Hey, Freiermuth has been everything they needed. They haven't had the kind of tight end since Heath Miller.
Yeah,
I would actually say that he's a more polished and refined route runner than Heath Miller. Heath Miller was a really good pass catcher, but I feel like Heath Miller was kind of like that old school traditional tight end.
He's like a sixth offensive lineman in the running game.
I feel like Freiermuth is more of a wide receiver, but he really is a tight end because he can block and do those things. But he has come on, and I don't think it's a coincidence that the Steelers have played better as their rookies have started to make more contributions. The two guys on the offensive line, Freiermuth at tight end and then Najee Harris, they've kind of become the bedrock of that offense. And as they continue to get better, whoever is the next quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers is going to benefit from having some solid weapons around them.
Yeah, they got a pretty good foundation built for the next guy to come in there. So, and maybe they just stay local there and end up getting Pickett right across the street, bring him in.
Maybe it's time for them to get a quarterback. We'll see if they can get one.
Well, yeah, that'll be easy. All right, let's take another quick break, and we're going to come back and talk about this Thursday night game. All right, Buck, we've got Ravens, we've got Dolphins. Just from the Ravens standpoint, what are you looking at in this game?
I'm really looking to see like how Lamar Jackson kind of sustains the success that he's had. It's really funny, DJ. Like, he's rated in the top 10 as a rusher and as a passer. And, you know, the thing is, your eyes tell you that he's playing better, even though the numbers don't necessarily reflect that. Like his completion rate is only at like 65. His passer rating is sub 100, which isn't bad, but it's sub 100 when we've seen a ton of guys over that mark. He has, what, 13 touchdowns and seven or eight interceptions. And so it hasn't been terrific, but man, he leads the league in fourth quarter comebacks and game-winning drives. And the thing that was viewed as his Achilles heel, he's kind of resolved that this year by showing people that he can come back. And I would say that what's scary about the Baltimore Ravens is they have absorbed a ton of injuries to the point we don't even talk about all the injuries that they suffered, but yet and still, they're still sitting here at 6-2 and in the mix. That's scary knowing that they haven't played, I would say, great football, but they found a way to win enough games to kind of be in the position to maybe backdoor into a number one seed when it's all said and done.
You know what I was thinking about? It's fascinating about Baltimore. This is, you know, that old line people use, winners win, losers lose. Like,
yeah.
They just kind of find their way to winning football games. I don't know that necessarily they should win. Last week was a great example of that against Minnesota. They had them dead to rights. But they just, it's in their DNA. They just kind of have a feel for finishing games and making things happen. But I was thinking about, like, look inside this division. We were just talking about the Cleveland Browns offensive line earlier. There's not one, as it's when they're all healthy, there's not one Baltimore Raven offensive lineman that would start for Cleveland. Not one. Cleveland's better across the whole board.
Yeah.
The running back situation, obviously, especially due to injury, Cleveland's probably got three that are, well, I know for sure better. two that are much better, but probably three that are better than anybody that Baltimore has. You know, tight ends, okay, I'll give Andrews. You can give Andrews a little bit of the edge there, but Cleveland's got three good tight ends. Baltimore's got their guys too. So let's say that's a slight advantage to Baltimore. And then receiver-wise, like Hollywood's really come on. I maybe even give them a slight edge. But then you flip it over to the defensive side of the ball. Outside of maybe Calais Campbell, I mean, that's Calais Campbell's the only one where you're like, okay, absolutely, he starts for Cleveland. I don't know that there's another one where you're like, oh, for sure, he's better than what Cleveland has.
Marlon Humphrey, maybe?
Yeah, maybe. Denzel Ward, when Denzel Ward's going well.
Yeah.
Marlon Humphrey's giving up some plays now.
He is. And so, DJ,
I'm just saying, you could say, okay, maybe Marlon Humphrey, but it's not a no doubt.
So think about that.
But they just win.
So that's what we're saying. And some of this happens is it's the mystique, right? Like sometimes when the Ravens run out the tunnel, in your mind, you can't help it, but you think about the Ed Reed, the Ray Lewis's of the world, all the great players that have put on that uniform and the way that they play. What I admire about the Baltimore Ravens, and you work there, to me, they hang their head on toughness and grit and resiliency in that, hey, man, we might not have the most skill, but we certainly can hit you in the mouth and make it a street fight. And we don't know if you can last four quarters of us just throwing haymakers at you.
Yeah,
and they win games like that. And I give John Harbaugh a ton of credit. I had to do a thing where I said, look, he's my coach of the year because all the injuries that they've had, they could have easily fallen apart. And he somehow kept them together. And I think some of the stuff that he does makes him the ultimate player's coach in just terms of his belief in his guys.
Yeah,
and two guys, really. His belief in number eight, I believe that we'll talk about the Dolphins tonight. I believe that Brian Flores could take a page from what John Harbaugh does in terms of pumping life into his quarterback. Mm-hmm. There has never been any doubt when any time a question is asked about Lamar Jackson, whether he's playing well, whether he's playing poorly, he always celebrates that guy as if he's a superhero. And then the way that he believes in Justin Tucker, the way that he is like, hey, you made it? Yep, go get it.
Yeah.
And they do it. I believe there is something that you can learn from that. The belief that you pump into your players, man, it can just spread throughout a team. And a team that should not be 6-2 is sitting at 6-2. And a lot of it is just because of toughness and the self-belief that they have amongst them individually and collectively.
Lamar Jackson has 2,200 passing yards and 600 rushing yards right now. This offense, in terms of total offense, is second in the league. And we've just told you the offensive line is not very good. The running backs are not very good. You've got a good receiving group has been better than advertised. They're all starting to come on and play well. The tight end group's solid. But there's nobody else to point to for credit. Like, Lamar Jackson's make the whole thing go. It's been incredible what he's done. I mean, they're fourth in red zone. They're third in the league in rushing. Obviously, he's the guy when it comes to that. So everything they're doing there is because of him. Then you flip it over on the defensive side of the ball. This is 21st ranked scoring defense. They're 31st against the pass. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, this is a quarterback carrying a football team. But it goes back to your point, which, and I kind of wrote these down when looking at this game, like, the Ravens built a team that supports Lamar Jackson, you know, especially initially. They built up his skills, developed him, so made him, you know, make individual improvements. But more importantly, they built his confidence. They filled that dude with so much confidence, mm-hmm. and he's brimming with confidence. And now you're seeing it now, when maybe there's some deterioration in some of the supporting cast, he's making it all work. And that's a franchise quarterback. When you can kind of make the stink go away, that's what he does.
Oh man, he makes it go away. And that's the definition of a franchise quarterback, because you read off the numbers. They're not playing great, DJ. When you look at them on tape, you're like, man, how are they surviving? But they make a handful of plays, and it's the belief, not only that Harbaugh has in his players, but now when you're talking about franchise quarterback, I sincerely believe that the Ravens feel like when number eight has the ball, he's going to figure out a way to get it done. And that is the only thing that you want when it comes to a franchise quarterback. If we give our guy the ball, that he will find a way to get us to the winner's circle. He does it.
Okay, I want to give you yes or no questions. We're going to flip it over to the Dolphins, okay? Yes or no, quick answers.
Yep.
We just talked about that with Lamar and the Baltimore Ravens. Have the Miami Dolphins built the right team around Tua Tagovailoa?
Nope.
Have the Miami Dolphins developed his skills and improved him as a football player?
No.
Have the Miami Dolphins filled him with confidence?
No.
Polar opposite.
Complete.
Look at how opposite. To do it on one hand, how not to do it on the other.
Yeah, and it's bad. And then people wonder why he isn't playing well. I mean, how can you? Like, since he stepped in the door, DJ, there's always been conversations about, is he good enough? Ryan Fitzpatrick being there, the yo-yoing of Fitzpatrick, and then he's in, and then he's out, and then he's in, and, oh, we're going to start you, but then we're going to finish with Fitzpatrick. Like, how can you ever develop confidence in that? And I know that there's a part of our fan base, and even I would say, oh, well, he has to be tough enough to endure that. But, man, when you have your young quarterback, we talk about, like, just putting a bubble around him, yeah. Trying to protect him. It's your biggest investment. You want him to grow and flourish and all that stuff. Then you talk about the weapons around him. Hey, year one is seeing what he can do. Year two is making sure he has enough around him to thrive. Look, Jaylen Waller was a nice addition, but I would say they could use even more. Will Fuller is great when he's there, but he's not always available. You know, those things. And then finally, just
the offensive line stinks. That's the problem.
Terrible. Protection, play callers, playmakers. And
yeah. So I would give him, I would actually give him a B in terms of some of the playmakers. Like, mm-hmm. you've got Waddle and Gesicki. Those are good players. Mm-hmm. You know, if Devontae Parker's healthy, he's a solid player. You know, they've got some decent guys. It's not bad. I give them a B for their, but their offensive line's a D or an F. Like, terrible.
Yeah.
So, like, when you start out initially, if you, like, the Ravens had a good offensive line. Now, their offensive line has deteriorated. They've got injuries. Ronnie Stanley hadn't been out there. Obviously, Orlando Brown's no longer there. You know, Villanueva has not been good. But they mm-hmm. had Lamar early years with a good offensive line, build up his confidence, build up his skills. Then he can cover up some of the offensive line issues. But to come in as a baby into the league and to be playing behind a sieve, basically, that's a challenge. And – yeah. So anyways, that's kind of the take there on the Dolphins. They're going to have a tough one in this one. If they win this game, this would be exhibit 9,406. Why anybody that gambles on NFL games is crazy.
Yeah. They happen to win this one, and they're playing better, but if they win this one, it'd be a major surprise. It just doesn't seem like a team that is heading in the right direction.
No, I want to encourage everybody to hang out with us tonight, though. We call this game. This is Thursday as we're recording this. So Thursday night, go to twitch.tv/movethesticks. Joy Taylor, Bucky Brooks, myself. We will have the chat is open. We interact with you guys on there. It's a fun hang. It's a good way to watch the game. Especially, you know, when the game gets out of hand, I think it's when we're at our best, because we can have fun with scouting stories. We can do crossover talk.
Hopefully it won't get out of hand.
Well, we'll see. Anything else you want to add before we get out of here, Buck?
Nah, man, it was always a great show. It was good to chop it up and have some of those topics discussed. A lot to kick around in the football world.
LSU had not done well with defensive linemen. Who knew? You learn something every day. All right, that's going to do it for us. Appreciate you guys hanging with us. We'll catch you next time right here on Move the Sticks.